I am Sheen, a scientist, social entrepreneur, Oxford and Cambridge graduate, and you are listening to Dream Girl, my weekly podcast where I chat to incredible women about their journey, career choices, and generally about being awesome. Hello, and welcome back to season two of Dream Girl. I am Sheen, your host, and our guest today is Ruby Dahl. I'm just going to read a little intro about Ruby before we start talking to her. So Ruby is a speaker, performer, and author of four books of poetry, prose, and self-help. She writes about healing, heartbreak, relationships. She talks about taboo topics in the South Asian community especially, such as mental health, grief, moving on. She highlights the importance of self-love and self-worth, which I am very excited to dig deeper into. Ruby's words have reached celebrities all around the world, from Bollywood movie actors such as Ayushmann Khurrana, influencer Deepak Khosla, Humble the Poet, to Paris Hilton and even Khloe Kardashian. So most recently, Ruby has started a YouTube channel to further her purpose by delivering useful life tips in a more comfortable setting. Ruby, welcome. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here
today.
Me
too. First of all, you know, mustard is my favorite color as well. And I have a very similar jumper that I wear on work meetings, you know, when you have to cover the pajama.
I mean, I've filmed a YouTube video in this. I've worn this in lots of photos, and now I've turned it into like a home jumper because of the amount of times that I've worn it. I absolutely love mustard. Like, it's a must.
I agree.
A mustard is a must.
Oh, look at you being a poet already. Okay, we get it.
Yeah.
So tell me, Ruby, walk us through the journey. I mean, I obviously have read your whole story, so please tell us a bit more about you.
Yeah, so originally I'm from Afghanistan. So, you know, I immigrated with my family to the UK when I was three. A year later, I lost my mum, unfortunately. So I was brought up by my dad with my older brother. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I turned to books as a form of escapism. They always healed me. They always made me feel so much happier about everything. So I developed a love for books very early on while I was experiencing everything in life. And all the hardships. And because of that, I always wanted to be an author. I wanted to write stories, more specifically young adult fiction novels about, you know, people of colour, young girls of colour, books that I didn't really have any accessibility to growing up. And for some reason, when I turned 21, I experienced a few things and I decided to create an Instagram page instead. And that diverted me from the fiction writing to essentially poetry writing and writing to heal, which is what I do right now. And a year after that, the page kind of just blew up and everyone wanted me to publish a book, and I decided to self-publish because at that particular point, like, you know, Instagram poetry was so taboo and it was so like, mm-hmm. people weren't really traditional publishing companies weren't really opting for it much. So I decided to self-publish. And yeah, 4 years later, I'm still writing, still healing, still moving forward.
Love it. Okay, so much to unpack here. Let's start from the beginning. So you said you are from Afghan origin, but you were born in India, yeah. and then you were brought up yeah. in the UK.
Yeah.
Wow. How do you feel about this identity? Like, this is such a rich mix of things. Like, how was it growing up? How did it shape your personality into who you are now?
I never really felt a part of something because obviously, like, I'm brown, so everyone always assumed that I was Indian, but I'm not Indian. Yeah. I'm Afghan. Explaining to people what my culture was very, very difficult because I come from such a minority group, you know, an Afghan Sikh. Most people are not aware of such mm-hmm. a culture. So I used to just go ahead and be like, yeah, I'm Punjabi, you know, I'm Punjabi. I can't speak Punjabi, but I'm Punjabi, you know. So I spent most of my life, I spent battling with that identity. Mm-hmm. There weren't, you know, because I used to turn to books so much, there weren't many books about South Asian girls, let alone Afghan, Sikh, Punjabi, born in, like, there was nothing of the sort that I could relate to. So essentially, the only thing I really did is just, you know, rely on my family to provide me with the support. Mm-hmm. I felt very displaced, but obviously as an immigrant, as a 1.5 gen immigrant, I was brought up in Northwest London. So it wasn't very hard to find other brown people, to find other people of colour that were feeling exactly the way that I was. Mm-hmm. When I went to school, I'm obviously from a working class family. So when I went to school, there were so many people of colour. That made me feel a sense of unity. It made me feel like, look, there's so many of us that are so different. But at the same time, when you do grow up in such an environment, there's, you know, limited opportunities. There's so much that you have to kind of battle against to actually come out and shine. And I found that was quite difficult. And then along with that, experiencing everything that I was personally, it was a big mold. It was a big mesh of things.
I can imagine. And I think the importance about talking about this, right, is we all experience this. So I personally, my ancestors are from India, but all the people that I've known in my family, we were born and brought up in Mauritius, and I came to the UK to study. So it's a bit of the same things where people assume you are Indian. And especially me, when I say Mauritius, they're like, where is that? Is that Mauritania? And it's quite the same. So, but it's sad that, you know, because I think this is such a richness to ourselves. Like, you are such an interesting person because of all of this. But when you're young, you don't understand that because no one tells you this. And you don't see people like you that you can look up to. Yeah. So that's why now you are the person that younger girls can look up to. So we need to hear more about your stories.
I mean, one of my best friends is Mauritian, actually.
Really?
She's also from Mauritius. Yeah. So she also, you know, experienced the same difficulty in people actually understanding, like, yes, I'm brown, but I'm not Indian. I'm from Mauritius, but, you know, I have lineage that goes. It's such a complicated mess, but it's like it's what contributes to making us who we are and how special we are. We've got, like, you know, generations of deep historical lineage there, which is amazing.
Absolutely. So how many languages do you speak, Ruby?
I speak Hindko, which is my mother tongue, and I speak Hindi. And I speak English. I can't really, like, I can understand Punjabi, but I can't really speak it. Whenever I try to speak Punjabi, I always end up, like, bringing Hindi into it. I watched way too many Star Plus programs growing up. That's why I can speak Hindi.
Right. Like, that's the reason why. Same. So I learned Urdu properly in school, but then because of the amount of TV shows I've watched and Bollywood movies I've watched, my Hindi is fluent.
On point. I could, you know, I wanted to be an Indian actress growing up. I was like, I'll be one of those Indian actresses, you know, who can just, you know, you see so many foreigners who go to India, right? And they can't speak a single word of Hindi. And it really pisses me off because I'm like, I can speak such good Hindi. Like, what must they think of us? You know, what must they think?
Right. I agree. Which is what, So, you know, going back to the Bollywood dream, I think we've all been there. The other day, somebody mentioned to me that you are very good at, like, really stressing dramatic points. I was like, I know, because I've been training to become a Bollywood actress. That didn't happen. But thank you.
Been watching Star Plus for, like, you know, the last 20 years, and the dramatic,
the head tails, come on.
Head tails, the surprises, the shocks, it's all there.
I know, I agree. But yeah, you know, this thing that you mentioned about representation and the lack of it when we were growing up, which is so true. Just thinking about it, someone mentioned it once, and you know, like, all the dolls that I had when I was younger were dolls that were white skinned with gold curls, right? And you were like, this is not me, this is a piece of doll. Okay, cool. And now it is a bit better. You have all kinds of things, which is good in terms of representation. But so now we have a lot of people who are trying to fill that gap when it comes to people of color. But what do you think we can do, you know, you and I and just anyone else? How can we make this better for the next generation?
I think being accessible, for sure, that's one thing that being out there is already, it's a plus, because these days, you know, we've got social media, we've got all these different platforms through which if young people wanted to find a, you know, person of colour who's a podcaster, found. If they want to find a person of colour who's a YouTuber, found. If they want to find a person of colour who's an author, found. But actually being able to speak to them and to find tools and ways in which they can make it too, because we need to understand that we're so underrepresented in every single field, that it's not about me making it on my own. It's about me making it and then me paving a way for all the other, you know, brown girls and boys to be able to make it too. If I don't provide those tools and the things that I used to make it, essentially, I've not made anything, but, you know, to just be where I am and be happy. If I can share that invaluable knowledge with other people at no cost, it's literally just about sharing what worked for me. It makes things so much better for them. So I think accessibility is key. Just knowing that, okay, I've been able to get to this particular place with minimal opportunities, coming from, you know, a state school, being surrounded by so many working class people from underrepresented backgrounds. The fact that I still was able to follow my dreams and achieve them, I didn't know so many things that I know now. And there's so many people who are so much younger than me who still don't know. Mm-hmm. And it would just be so much better if I was able to provide all of this information to them. So yeah, I think we can make it better by A, just representing, you know, our gender, our skin color, everything we're representing, and B, just being accessible.
Yeah, I love that. And I think this also comes from, you know, Kamala Harris when she won the election, where I'm not a political person, I don't have any affiliation, but I liked what she said in terms of, you know, when you get somewhere, make sure you open the door for other people to come after you.
Absolutely.
So I think this is key, which is why we're here today, you know, to just talk and share our journeys with other people. But yeah, okay, so now going back to the writing, I know about your writing, how it started. You always have been reading a lot, and you always had it in you that you wanted to become a novelist. But how did it actually happen for you?
Oh, God. I was reading a lot of books, so many books. Mm-hmm. I used to read like Jacqueline Wilson, Kathy Cassidy, Karen McCombie.
Of course.
And I used to... I just really enjoyed the fact that there were so many stories in there that took me to different worlds. I just loved it. I loved opening a book, diving into it. Like, you know, we'd have to get into bed by 8 o'clock and I'd have this little torch and I'd get under the covers and I'd literally like use my torch and read the books and stuff. And I found it so great and so inspiring and encouraging. Sorry, my dad. Your cord's been on there. My dad's like, I'm watching you. Okay, I found it so inspiring and encouraging to be able to have the skill to allow your readers to dive into a different world. Mm-hmm. Like, how incredible is it to be able to write something and then for another person to be able to read that and think, oh my God, like, I am transported. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that those authors were magicians and I wanted to be a magician. I wanted to be that person who was able to create stories and allow my readers to escape, mm-hmm. essentially. So that's how the journey to want to be a writer came about. And I wrote my very first fiction piece when I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
Karen McCombie has this Ali. Yeah. It was very bad. It was very, very bad. I don't know where it is anymore, to be honest. I think I threw it away.
We need that.
But I read this particular series, Ali's World by Karen McCombie. It was about this, you know, big bustling family with lots and lots of dogs and lots of siblings and everything, and a single parent, which I found really great. Mm-hmm. And I just decided to write like an alternative ending to it. So I, you know, got my book out, got my pen out, and I was like, yep, you know, this is great. And that's when I realized that I loved writing. Mm-hmm. I had all like the speech marks and the speech bubbles and just like I made it into a proper book. I was so proud of myself. And then when I went to high school, like, I loved creative writing. I would get so jealous when someone would get a better grade than me. I'd be like, how dare this person, you know, get a better grade than me? I'm supposed to be an author.
I'm the writer here.
I'm the writer here. But yeah, I just loved dabbling at it. I loved writing. I loved storytelling. And then when I went to university, I studied philosophy. And every summer of university, I would work on the first draft of the novel that I was writing back then. Mm-hmm. Obviously now when I look back, it was very, very, very bad because I was not that well read. Like I read a lot of fantasy fiction novels and stuff, but essentially I should have been a lot more well read before I started writing. So I didn't pursue that novel, but it's great the amount of passion that I had, like when I think about it, because I would spend my summers during university just working on it, writing it, not knowing where it's going to take me, but just writing it anyway. And then when I graduated from university, I decided to do a PGCE, which was supposed to be a plan B. So it was something that I was supposed to fall back on in case the writing didn't work. So I wanted to do the PGCE, do it for a year, and then spend a year writing my novel. And then if that didn't work, then go back to the PGCE. But 3 months into my PGCE, I realized, okay, what am I doing? Why am I focusing so much on plan B when I should be focusing on plan A? Mm-hmm. So then I left the PGCE and this was November 2015 and I decided to start, you know, working on my novel that I was writing at the time. And within three months, I created an Instagram page because within that period, so much happened in my life. You know, I broke my heart and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I need to heal. I need to, you know, and I just created that page and now I'm here.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I think it's very brave that you decided to ditch plan B to focus entirely on plan A, because I do agree with you that as long as you have a safety net, you don't take bigger chances. So yeah, you needed that. And that's very brave.
Absolutely.
Kudos on that. And, you know, see, you took the right decision.
You know, initially it is so difficult. Like when you say no to doing something safe and you end up taking a risk and taking a challenge, essentially, because when I said no to my PGCE, essentially I was unemployed. I went back to my part-time job, which was working at Next, retail as a sales assistant. So I'd work on the weekends and I'd work on my book on the weekdays. And it was a really, really dark period for me, because when you first step out into that world of taking risks and challenges, it's not going to work out for you straight away.
It's not that easy.
Like,
yeah,
it's not going to fall into your lap, you know? Initially, you're going to battle with doubt. You're going to be like, what have I done? Why did I do this? You know, that was supposed to be secure. Now I'm literally like earning like £7 an hour, £6 an hour, however much I was earning at the time. Working in a weekend job, I'm not even getting any, you know, any overtime. I have to pay for my car. Like, what's going on? Thank God I was living with my parents still, because that's always great. Mm-hmm. But it was really, really hard. And I'm not going to say that it's gotten any easier over the years, because that doubt will always be there. But I think the passion and the motivation has definitely increased over the years. And when you start seeing results, that's when you get even more motivated and you're like, okay, yeah, I am on the right track. But that first year is the toughest, I'd say, when you try to do anything, when you step out of your comfort zone and say, I'm going to follow my dreams. That is the toughest time, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Sticking to it is going to be successful, but you don't know when it's going to happen. So it's about the patience and the belief that it will happen at some point. Yeah. God.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So, okay, so then what kind of process did you have leading to the first book in terms of, when did you decide, okay, you mentioned that on Instagram you were getting a lot of traction and people were asking for you to write a book. And then how did that creative process happen in terms of deciding to write a book and then having the book published?
So I knew nothing about book writing. I didn't know anything about contemporary poetry book writing.
Right.
I knew about fiction. Okay. So, you know, I knew I need to write a manuscript. I need to edit it. I need to write a proposal. I need to approach a literary agent. But now suddenly I'm in contemporary poetry, which is a very niche genre. Instagram poetry at that particular point, I think there were only a few, this is 5 years ago, so there were only a few really well-known authors. One of them was Rupi Kaur, the other one was R.H. Sin. They had R.M. Drake, Samantha King, and I think Najwa was just on like 300k followers at the time. So back then, like, if you didn't have a million followers,
no one cares, right?
I'm sorry, but you're not going to get published. And I had probably 20k. So I was like down here and everyone was like up here.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, if I'm going to publish a book, I'm going to self-publish. And self-publishing then means I need to figure everything out for myself. So I went from writing on Instagram to now writing a book, trying to figure out how to, you know, format it, layout it, and edit it. And then figure out how to market it, and then figure out how to find a designer to design the cover, how to do the structure. So I had to do everything, basically. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I wasn't an author as such, as I was like trying to build this thing, like a builder, an innovator, or I don't know what
it's
it was.
It's just having a business, isn't it? You're just having to wear
Essentially now, when I think about it, it's now this is my brand and this is, you know, what I do. But back then, that wasn't the goal. The goal wasn't, I'm going to build a brand. The goal was always, I just want to write and heal. So the first thing I did is I got a manuscript together. So every piece I've ever written, I've got it in a Word document, every single piece I've ever written. And then I went back to that big Word document and I was like, okay, so what do I want in my book? Okay. Like, what do I want? And then obviously it's about structuring it. And I've come a long way from that first book. Like, my writing style was very, very different. I would do like micro poetry, essentially, when I first started. It was literally like 3-liners, 2-liners, you know, 4-liners. Now it's not that anymore. You know, I made that journey. But at that particular point, that was what felt right, and that's what I wanted to share with the world. So I do.
Wow. Okay. And how do you, you know, even if it's like three lines, I am terrible at rhyming anything. So even if it's like three lines, does it happen where like inspiration just hits you and you write it? Or do you try to put yourself in that mindset and then try and write something?
I think with the genre that I was writing back then, it was a lot about, you know, whenever I felt something, I'd just write it down, mm-hmm. like type it on my phone. It was a lot to do with my emotions. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like now I write a lot more. I rationalize a lot more in a way. Like, I think about certain topics and I write about them in a way I would to my friend. Mm-hmm. But back then it was literally just me writing down my feelings on paper. So it was like me journaling, and journaling, you can do it any time of the day, really. So I just like, you know, write it on my phone, write it on a book. There were set days that I dedicate to writing poetry when I was writing the book. Mm-hmm. But for my page, essentially, it was just whenever I felt a certain way, I'd just write it down.
Wow. So, but okay, so now there are two things, right? When you're writing about your emotions, it's very raw. Did you find it kind of emotionally draining, or did you find it as an outlet for all the things that you were feeling?
I think I spent the first 2 years falsely believing that pain and poetry went hand in hand. So when I was writing those pieces, I genuinely felt that when my pain stopped, my art would stop as well, and I wouldn't have talent. That's essentially how I felt. So it definitely was very empowering, because I had all these emotions in me, all these feelings in me that I was able to turn into poetry and words. But there was also this fear that, okay, when these emotions run out, what am I going to do? How am I going to write? And, you know, so yeah, I think it wasn't emotionally draining. It was definitely empowering to be able to write. And of course, I was making myself very vulnerable in those initial years. And that is why I had blocked around 30 to 40 people from my childhood, people from my community, people from, you know, I blocked so many people when I made that page initially. Mm-hmm. The only people who knew, and initially when I used to write, actually, my name was R. Dahl. So nobody knew what my name was. I never used to sign it under my name.
Right.
So it was essentially like a pen name. I would not, you know. Mm-hmm. And I blocked everyone because I was so scared of being judged or being called out or being, you know. So yeah, it was very, very scary. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, now that we're talking about this, you know, putting yourself online is already scary enough. And you've put yourself online to be vulnerable and open about the way you were feeling and trying to take people on your healing journey, which is very brave and really cool, actually. But how did you find your audience was interacting with you? How did you find being an influencer on Instagram, which is what you are now? How did you find that? How did you go about handling the different emotions that you get from your audience?
I think I see, the thing is, the reason why I don't see myself as an influencer is because, like, I feel like, yeah, I do influence people in the sense of I want to influence their healing journeys positively. But when it comes to writing, I've not really had much, like, I've not had any backlash or any, like, oh, this is wrong, or, you know, what you're writing, I don't feel this way. Mm-hmm. Recently, yes, a lot more, because my pieces are a lot longer. Yeah. But back then, when I had smaller pieces, I used to get a lot of, oh, thank you for writing this, this is how I was feeling. So most of the time, what everyone was saying was literally, thank you, someone has finally written my feelings down on paper. That just encouraged me even more. That just made me feel like, okay, I'm being vulnerable, but look, I'm helping this particular person in feeling understood. And then that motivated me to say, this page is about creating a safe space for everyone to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. You know, I want everyone to feel their safest self, to feel like this is a safe space for mm-hmm. them, and they can say whatever they want. And the more vulnerable that I was, the more readers were able to resonate with what I was saying, and the bigger the community got, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I turned my vulnerability into a strength. I thought, there's no point of me seeing this vulnerability as a weakness, because it's not. If I'm embarrassed of my vulnerability, then everybody else is going to have a way to say, okay, look, your vulnerabilities aren't that great. Mm-hmm. But if I say, look, this is my vulnerability, this, you know, I feel this way, this makes me sad, mm-hmm. this makes me happy, this is the way to my heart, it just makes it something that I'm proud of, and it turns into my strength. And I guess that makes others feel like they can do the same. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've wanted to do.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. And I mean, I've been following your page as well. And I love the format that you do everything. Like, is there a lot of creative thinking behind how you are going to post things? What do you want to post? Like, what color is it going to be? Or do you just go with the flow?
I think because I've always kept the standard like white background, black writing, yeah. I was like, let me be a bit colourful, because my personality is really colourful. Okay, like I have a really colourful personality, and I'm like, why don't I do colours? Mm. So I tried to do colours, and then I'm like, yeah, but this is pink. What if guys don't share it? Like, you know, it needs to be. So then I get really confused. But in terms of my videos, I try to make sure that when I post my videos, there's enough pieces in between. Mm-hmm. But in terms of pink, blue, whatever, I'm not really fussy. Mm-hmm. I always pay attention to the kind of pieces I'm sharing. So like if I've shared a particular piece on a theme, I don't want to add this a similar or same one. Mm-hmm. Next to it, like I'd rather write about something different and share that instead. Mm-hmm. I don't want my readers to constantly see the same type of posts. Mm-hmm. From me. So yeah, I do pay attention to what I've already posted, and I'm like, okay, I've written about this, let me share something different now. But in terms of color and stuff, I'm cool.
Yeah, it's easier to be chilled about it, otherwise you just get too stressed. Yeah. out.
Yeah.
But also, you have a great following on Instagram. Was this, according to you, was it you gradually building it up, or what do you think really worked for you in terms of having a big audience?
Me taking another risk. So the first risk I took was obviously leaving my PGCE. Yep. That was something that I've never done it before in my life. Like, I've never given up on something. Yeah. So it was a huge surprise for everyone. Mm. The second thing was succumbing to Instagram, okay? Succumbing to the Instagram algorithm. And so every person who tries to write on Instagram and tries to become popular on Instagram starts looking at what other people are doing, right? Oh, this person's writing about this, and look at how many likes they've mm-hmm. gotten. Oh, this person is writing about this. This person's only doing two-liners. Maybe that's what's popular. Mm. So for the first 2 years, that's exactly what I became, you know, victim to. I wrote short-form poetry. Initially, that's exactly how I felt. But eventually, I feel like I was just writing it because I thought it was going to get me more likes. Mm-hmm. It was, okay, I'm good at this. So it's going to get me more likes. So I might as well continue writing short-form poetry. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a short-form poetry person. I chat a lot, okay? So when my friends come to me for advice, I talk like there's no stopping right. me, okay? And I was like, why am I writing in two lines when I've not spoken in two lines in my entire life? So I did what any sane person would not do, and I started writing huge chunks, nice. Okay, on Instagram. And Instagram is a very quick tap, you know, scroll kind of a page. It's a, you know, that kind of an yeah. app. You know, you don't want to spend forever reading like a whole paragraph. For one thing, I don't. So why would I expect someone else to? But some of my most favorite Instagram authors, there's RM Drake, there's Bianca Sparacino, mm-hmm. and there's Najwa Zebian, and they write in long form prose. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I resonate with that so much. Mm-hmm. And this was around 3 years ago. And I was like, I am someone who's good at this. I'm someone who likes writing like this. Why should I keep writing short form poetry when it's just not me? It's you know, it was me a year ago, but it's not me anymore. Mm-hmm. So then I started writing long form prose. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not poetry. It's prose. It's bite-sized self-help, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's what my genre is now. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing that, Sheen, the page blew up. That's when it just went bam.
Oh my God.
And
she had the idea. Yeah.
it was just one risk. It was this idea of, okay, if I start writing this long form, maybe people are not going to like it. Because a lot of people said to me, they were like, don't do long. Like, you know, my own family used to say, why do you write such long pieces these days? Like, nobody reads it. And I'm like, yeah, you don't read yeah. it, but that doesn't mean nobody else is not going to read it.
Classic.
The kind of stuff I hate, even about my YouTube videos. We'll discuss that later. Yeah. But anyway, family, hey. I then decided, okay, let me just do this. So I did it for a day. I did it for 2 days. Mm-hmm. Then I did it for a week. And I was like, you know what? Forget the likes. Like, I want to write like this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to write like this. And for some reason, it just resonated and it blew up. Mm-hmm. But even if it hadn't, Sheen, I would have continued writing in that form, because that is the form that I resonate with the most. Yeah. And that's me, like, as a writer, that's what I feel like I want to share with the world. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's when it blew up. It just kind of exploded. And over time, it's just been going from strength to strength. Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot of hard work. Yeah. Honestly, it's not easy. It's a, it's a full-time job to manage that page, to market my page, to do everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, a lot of that resonated with me, you know, when you were talking about colors, first of all, like even me with the podcast, I went with pink just because I love pink. And then I thought, is this looking a bit feminine now? Are men not going to share this? Are men not going to like it? And I was like, I don't care. I like it, you know, and it's all about sticking to what you like as well, just to be authentic. And then people will appreciate you for who you are. And which is exactly what happened to you. You actually landed at the gold mine once you realized that I should just do what I'm good at and what I want to do. And I think your passion showed through that, and your true talent was a bit more visible in the longer things rather than the shorter things, which is absolutely great. So now going a bit deeper into what you write about. So I know you write a lot about self-worth and, you know, self happiness and all of that. Yeah. It's something that I definitely think is missing in our generation, and I do not understand where it stands from. Is it from social media, the fact that we are constantly comparing ourselves to other people? But what are your thoughts on that, and what are the main actionable tips that you have for us?
Okay, so self-love is obviously it's having a high regard for your happiness and your well-being, and it's this idea that you want to put your well-being and your health forward, your mental and emotional health forward, your interests forward. And I feel like in our generation, this particular concept, this particular idea is missing. Like, we're not driven by self-love anymore. I don't know, like, you know, what the older generations were like, but social media has a huge, huge part to play, because there's so much to live up to, you know, so much in terms of body image, and so much in terms of having the perfect life, so much in terms of being in a perfect relationship, having the perfect house, having, you know, like, I'm 26 now, right? And even I, like, I promote self-love so much. And then I have days where, like, I'm literally, you know, in my pajamas, you know, probably haven't showered for like 2 days. And then I'm scrolling.
Yes.
Trolling on Instagram, and I see like this beautiful girl in this living in this humongous house with her picture perfect boyfriend, and I'm just like, what am I doing with my life? Like, what have I done? What have I achieved?
Where did I go wrong?
Where did I go wrong? And I've got like a packet of like humongous Doritos next to me, and I'm just like, what is going on?
And you
like,
keep eating, and you're like,
literally, like, what happened? And then I look at my box room, and I'm like, I'm still living in my parents' house. Like, what's going on? So it's literally, it's this idea of constant comparison, constant. And all of these ideals, they're false. Like, they're not real. There's so many people who look at me and they're like, oh, Ruby, you know, you're an author. Please tell me how to be an author. I want to be an author. And I'm like, I still work part time. What are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, yeah, be an author. You can be an author, but don't think that like I'm putting this image of me being this successful author in front of you. I'm still on a journey. Yeah. I'm still trying to get there. Even when I get there, I feel like I'll still be unhappy, because I'll be like, okay, I'm here now. Now I want to be here. You know, the humans generally we as humans, we're very unsatisfied, right? We always want the next high. We always want the next thing to keep us going, to keep us happy. But with social media comes this constant comparison, comes this constant, okay, this person looks like they've got it figured out. Why don't I have it figured out? And then that contributes to us having low self-worth, low self-love, you know? So, when you have self-love, essentially that contributes to self-worth. Both of those things come together, okay? Self-worth contributes to self-love. So when you have a high self-worth, you're like, okay, you know what? I am valuable. I am, you know, someone who deserves X, Y, and Z. You act in the name of self-love, right? So when you love someone, you take care of them. You do things that better their well-being and their emotional health, their mental health, their physical health. But when you don't have self-worth, then you don't love yourself, then you don't act in your betterment. Now, I love my dad. I'm going to take care of him. I'm going to, you know, do things for him. Now, if I don't love my dad, I'm not going to do anything for him. So in the same way, when you have low self-worth, you then don't do anything for yourself. You don't take care of yourself. You don't affirm yourself. You don't say, you know, I am worthy of going on a walk today. I am worthy of having this sandwich. I am worthy of going to have a shower. Like, you know, I need to take care of myself. I need to love myself. I need to cherish myself. And our generation is just in this constant cycle of like, you know, I'm unworthy, this person looks worthy, I'm not worthy, this person's doing this, I'm not worthy. You know, this constant comparison, this constant, we set up these high ideals for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We set up this, you know, this is what we need to meet.
Yeah.
And we don't understand that we're here, we came from here, we don't need to meet this. Look at the journey that we've made already. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty impressive journey. Mm. And yeah, like, you know, it's something that I have reached this point where I am so content in myself. Like, there's so many things that I have yet to achieve, but I feel like if I wasn't going to achieve them, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's no biggie mm-hmm. for me. I will give it my best, but if it doesn't happen for me, something else will happen for mm-hmm. me, and that will be just as good, and that will be something that's meant for mm-hmm. me. There was this time where I used to constantly compare myself. Oh my God, this person sold this many books. Oh my God, this person's done this. Oh my God, this why am I not doing any of this? Like, what's going on? Like, and I'm working day and night. Like, I'm working so hard to make it happen. You know, why is it not happening? And then I just stopped worrying. I was like, if it's meant to happen, it will, but I'm not going to kill myself over mm-hmm. it. I'm going to give it my 110%, but I'm going to enjoy my life. Like, I'm going to love myself. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to take myself out on walks. I'm going to get ready. I'm going to look good. I'm going to stop running, essentially. Stop chasing.
Right.
And walk.
Yeah, just enjoy it, right?
What's the enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I'm the same. I remember this one thing that stuck to me was I found something on Instagram where this person was taking care of their wonderfully beautiful garden. And I was like, why am I not doing this? I want a beautiful garden. And I was like, I don't even have a garden. I live in a flat. And I was like, what is wrong with you? And you know, you just start comparing. And we all do this. Like, I will post a photo of myself on a day where I look good and I'm happy with the way yeah. I look. But then when you see it for someone else, you assume that that's what they look like all the time. And you're yeah. like, but you yourself, you know the process. But why do you think that for other people the process is different yeah. and they are constantly yeah. on top of everything? But that's the vicious cycle of it, mm-hmm. right?
With TikTok, like TikTok's such a great platform. So many people are inspired. They're finding all these ticks and trips and ticks and everything. Tricks and
tricks. Yeah.
Ticks and tricks.
Yeah.
Tricks and tips, okay? And I'm seeing all these really cool things, okay? So I go on TikTok sometimes, right? And I see all these cool small businesses who are selling like journals, mm-hmm. selling stickers. They've got like 7 million likes and they, you know, they're doing so well. And I'm like, why am I not doing that? Yeah. Like, why have they got so many? And I'm like, but I don't want to sell journals. Like, I don't want to sell
stickers. You don't want to sell stickers, exactly.
Stickers. And then I'm just like, why am I? Like, I found this particular teacher on TikTok, okay? And she does this really cute TikTok of this is what a day in the life of a teacher looks like. And then I was looking at it and I was like, maybe I should have been a teacher. I don't want to be a teacher.
No, you didn't want to be one, remember?
it's this comparison. It's like it's because I think the biggest thing is that everybody's life is so accessible mm-hmm. to us now. We can see what everybody is doing. Yes. And it's this greed of wanting to do what everyone
yeah.
is doing. And it's like, no, you need to focus on your own path mm-hmm. and what your own goals are, you know? I want to be an author. I want to be a content creator. I want to make a change in people's lives, you know, positively, one word at a time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a teacher. I don't want to be mm-hmm. a small business. You know, they're all doing what they want to do mm-hmm. and that's their journey, but your journey is different. And it's this comparison that ruins it for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with this. And then it's also a bit of like, how do you protect the younger generation from that? Because imagine having all the problems that a teenager has anyway, and now also adding to that the extreme pressure of you constantly can see what older people are doing, you can see what your friends are doing, and you always think that you're not as good as them. And it's about, how do we go about this? Like, social media is great, but it's also got its downfalls.
You show your bad days as well as your good. I think mm-hmm. that it's as simple as that, which is why I don't try to sugarcoat it. Like, I did a YouTube video the other day on being an author. Mm-hmm. Now, essentially, I'm a best-selling author, right? I say bestseller because it's
don't
like...
Don't say okay, that. Yeah, I don't like it. Put your air quotes down.
Okay, I'm a best-selling yeah. author. But this... I'm a best-selling author, but the idea is that, you know, okay, cool, I've sold all these books, but I'm not living this glamorous author mm-hmm. life. Like, it's not like, you know, I'm getting out of this big car.
No private jet,
living
yeah.
this. Yeah, no, none yeah. of that. It's, I'm still on a journey. And people often think that when you have a title, when you have a title attached to you, when you have a particular title of this person has a certain number of subscribers, certain number of followers, certain number of books sold, they are somehow above the others. They're somehow, okay, this person's made it. It's like, no, we're still on a journey. I'm just on a different level on that journey mm-hmm. now. Like, I've stepped up, but I'm still on the journey. Mm-hmm. And in that particular video, I just made it so... I basically told them everything. I was like, look, I still work part-time until I don't reach that point where I'm like, I'm going to be financially completely stable yeah. with just the books. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to leave my part-time job because I don't believe in making myself, you know, that unstable. I don't believe in it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I would recommend to every person who wants to be an author. You know, it's a creative career mm-hmm. and to make something out of a creative career takes many, many years. Mm-hmm. So I would always recommend to any person that you need to make sure you've got some sort of, you know, backup income coming mm-hmm. in, some sort of financial umbrella mm-hmm. to fall back on. It's that simple. And that's what I believe in. So whenever people ask me, look, what does it look like? What is it? I tell them very clearly. I'm like, you know, I've not made it. I don't want you to think that I've made mm-hmm. it. I'm still on the journey. And I will tell you as honestly as I can, it takes a lot of hard work. It's taken me 5 years. It takes a lot of commitment mm-hmm. and it takes a lot of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So when you show people, you know, the grey, the black, the hard work, then they're able to see, okay, yeah, it's not just about the good stuff. It's about yeah. the amount of effort that goes into it. I said this one thing to my cousin once, where she was talking to me and she said, you know, some people have it so easy. Like some people, you look, this person's in a relationship. She looks so happy. Mm-hmm. She looks so in love. And I was like, you don't know how much pain she went through to get to that happiness. Right. If you don't want to live her dark days, don't say that you want to live her light. It's that
oh, wow. That's deep.
If you wouldn't wish to live her bad days, mm-hmm. like if you wouldn't wish to go through her pain, then don't wish for happiness. It's that simple. Yeah. Everyone's journey is different.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. And also, you know, we see things, we don't really know what is happening there. And you just wish for that thing, but you don't know the reality of it. And yeah. you might have it better. You just don't know.
Yeah.
And just don't know. That's absolutely great. So another thing that you also write a lot about, which I love, is a life of purpose, right? And I think yeah. in today's time, this is something that we young people, you know, with like passion economy and all of that, people are trying to find better ways of more fulfilling ways of living life rather yeah. than just getting money. So what does this mean to you, a life of purpose?
A life of purpose is essentially I don't want to entwine finance with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I always believe that we're expendable, right? Yeah. I mean, sorry, we're non-expendable, right? So in the lives of our family, mm-hmm. in the lives of our friends, we're non-expendable. Absolutely. Another Sheen cannot be found amongst That's your friends. Not, another yeah. Sheen cannot. Another Sheen cannot be found with your family. Mm-hmm. Okay, we are non-expendable. So why do we find jobs and why do we find career paths which we spend most of our lives doing that are expendable? Mm. Like in my particular job that I'm doing, if I'm not there, someone else will do it just as good.
That's better. Every one it's of us. Simple. Yeah, someone else will do it.
It's that simple, right? So then I thought, why would I live such a life? Like, why do I want to live such a life where I'm expendable? I want to live a life where I'm doing something and I'm making an impact on someone's life mm-hmm. and only I can do it because of the experiences that I've had and because of what I've brought with me, all the baggage, mm-hmm. right? And my purpose, once I realized it, was to use all these experiences, use everything that I've learned to encourage others on their healing journey, to support them, to help them, mm-hmm. and to create this safe space. That's when I realized I just want to serve. Like, I just want to help people in some way, like to help them feel like they're not alone, to help them feel like they can talk to someone, to help them feel like we're all on this journey together. And living a purposeful life is literally just that. It's about making some sort of an impact in someone's life, mm-hmm. some sort of a change, even if it's just in the life of like one person. If it's in the lives of your parents, incredible. Great. You're living a purposeful life, yeah. you know? They brought you up, you're helping them, you're taking care of them. Whatever you do, like every day, do one thing that adds some sort of value to someone else, someone other than yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's a purposeful life for me. And I try to do that with my writing. I try to do that now, like with the YouTube channel and everything. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to, share some wisdom and share some sort of comfort. And if I've managed to impact at least one person through my words, through my, you know, writing, I've lived a purposeful life. Like, that's it. I've served my purpose.
Oh, I love this, Ruby. You know, because back in the days when I was younger and naive, I used to think that in order to have a purpose to like be impactful, you need to impact a lot of people, because what's the point of helping one person? And then with time, I've realized that, you know, just having impact for one person is already amazing, right? Because it's you're being selfless. You're not just looking out for yourself. And I think that's so powerful, and it takes off the pressure, and you know that you're trying your best, and just helping one person at a time is enough. As long as, you know, we're just trying to make the world a better place, which is a bit cheesy, you know, this is what we're all about. Now, you know, switching gear a bit before we go to YouTube, the final thing I want to talk to you about, which is a topic, I think you've made a YouTube video about this, about toxic friendships.
Yes.
Please, let's talk about this. This is something that I have experienced, but this is something that I find quite hard to talk about. So
I'd love to know.
So tell me, you start. What's toxic friendships for you?
Toxic friendships essentially are friendships which don't really help you thrive. Mm-hmm. They are friendships that essentially you choose your friends, right? So you want to choose people who help you thrive, mm-hmm. who bring you joy, who make you happy, who bring you comfort. If your friendships don't bring you any of those things, then you're not in a healthy friendship, mm-hmm. essentially. Mm-hmm. We don't pick our family, we don't pick our parents, our siblings, mm-hmm. none of those, but we do pick our friends. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I've gotten into lots of these toxic friendships. Like now I can count my friends on one hand, like I don't really have that many. It's true, because it's like, it's this aspect of, you know, you get to this point where you're like, is it me? Like, am I someone who's just not like tolerant anymore? Mm. And it's like, no. It's the fact that you've grown and you understand what healthy and non-healthy is, You understand that, you know, this way of speaking to me, this way of treating me is not right. Mm-hmm. Why should I tolerate it? I can tolerate it with my family. I can tolerate it with my siblings. But why should I tolerate it with someone who I've chosen, who I've given the goodwill to be in my life? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple types, and I've come across all of these. There's people that make you feel bad about yourself. Mm-hmm. So people who... you know, I said it in my video as well. You know, I had a friend who made me feel really bad about the color of my skin.
Oh, great.
I know. And she made me feel bad about being darker than the other girls. And she was picking out like a wedding dress, like a bridesmaid dress for her wedding.
So you were being difficult. Like,
oh. Yeah. Oh. Sorry?
You were being difficult.
No. Apparently she went to... buy the bridesmaid outfits, mm-hmm. and she was like, I'm not worried about anybody else, like I'm not worried about the color, a color that will suit them, but I'm really concerned about you, like I need to get a color that would suit your skin color because you're so dark. And there were a few things of that sort, like I'd wear a dress and she'd be like, your butt looks really flat.
Oh my,
you know, I'd wear something and she'd be like, you look really fat. Like, it was just different ways like of making me feel bad. And I craved her compliments. That's how toxic it
that's
it
the
got.
problem. That's how they get you.
I craved, like, you know, when she said I looked good, I was like, oh my God, I actually probably look good, which is why she's telling me. And there was another friend who, like, you know, was never happy in my happiness. So any time that I did something, there was never, oh, congratulations, you've done this. She'd only ever get in touch with me because she wanted something. Oh, you remember you went on this holiday, how did you book it? Oh, you did this, like, you know,
classic,
friends like that.
Yep.
And then there's friends who, like, always go on about themselves. So, like, you meet up with them and basically their therapist.
Yeah.
All about them. You're their therapist. Mm-hmm. So you're sitting there and you're completely quiet. I timed it. I was quiet throughout the whole date. Okay. I'm just quiet and she's just going on and on and on. I'm like, okay, when am I going to talk? Like, when am
I? Do you care how I am?
No. And then there are friends who are only there for you when you're low.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is very interesting.
There's the hero attitude here, isn't it?
You're most likely to remember the people who've been there for you in your hardest times. Mm-hmm. So you're most likely to be like, this person is so special to me because when I was in my lowest period, they were there for me. Those friends essentially feed off your sadness. They thrive when you're doing bad. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they've got like this caregiver personality and they take care of you. They're like, oh yeah, this person's, you know, feeling really low. I'm taking care of her. La, 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 la. That gives them energy because it's like, yeah, I'm taking care of this person. But the moment that you do well and you don't need them, that person disappears.
They don't like you. That friend,
they're no longer there because you're doing well.
Yeah.
And there's lots of toxic friendships like that. Like there's so many toxic friendship traits that over the years I've recognized and I'm just like, I don't need this in my life. But you tell me, like, you know, what's... What's your story?
Cool. So all the categories you've mentioned, I've lived it all. Like, especially the friend who disappears once things get better for you.
Yeah.
Always, like, they're there offering a shoulder for you to cry on. And then once things get better, it's like, oh, you don't need me anymore. So that's the hero complex, right? Which I've noticed as well. And then the person who keeps talking about themselves. Yes, we've all been there. And I remember I had a phone call with this person once and it was all about them. And then they even hung up and didn't even bother asking, what's new with you? And you're like, okay.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so that's been there as well. But I think the one thing I'm struggling with now, I mean, as you said, I was the same when I was younger. I had a massive group of friends. And now I have just a few that I talk to. And I used to ask myself the same question, like, am I just being intolerant? Am I too old now to make new friends? I don't understand. But I think it's because you know what you want from a friendship, right? And anyone else who doesn't fit the bill should be out. But one thing that I struggle with now is with my newfound kind of like public life where I'm on the internet, I do the podcast and stuff like that. I get a lot of hate from people who are meant to be my friends. I don't know if you've experienced that, but a lot of people, like, for example, I'll give you a for example, like Jay Shetty followed me on Instagram. I was gassed. Yeah. I was like,
that's amazing. I love Jay Shetty.
Me too. And I was like, I'm on 5K. Like, I don't even have that many followers. And he was following me. I got so gassed. And then I started,
that is amazing.
I started sharing it with everybody. And then so many people were like, ugh, so what? Like, I've never heard of him. Or like they say things like, oh, this goes to show how Instagram following doesn't mean anything because I don't know who this person is. And it's like, what's the point in bringing me down? Right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I am excited. You could get excited for me even if you don't understand what this means. And then I kept seeing this trend of every time something good would happen, people will downplay it for me. And I was like, what? And I'm not someone who will brag about things that happen for me, but then sometimes when something good is happening, you do want to share it with your friends.
Yeah.
And then being reminded of like, oh, this is not a big deal, or like getting new reaction. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, I was like, is this toxic? Is this me looking for attention? Is it me being needy? That's when you're not sure. What is your take on that?
Definitely toxic.
Okay.
These things are important to you, and when something is important to you, it's your friend's duty to boost you and to be like, oh my god, that's incredible, you know, because this has made you happy. Now, even if I don't understand it, like, even if I don't know Jay Shetty, which I don't know which world you're living in if you don't know who Jay Shetty is, but you know, even if I don't know who Jay Shetty is, you are clearly excited about this, you are clearly happy about this, and it's my duty to be able to congratulate you and be like, oh my god, that's amazing, you know. And that is amazing, like, when someone like Jay Shetty follows you. And I completely agree that, like, even in cases where they don't downplay it, but they don't congratulate you on an achievement, that is also toxic, like, very, very toxic. Mm-hmm. I've had, most recently, a good friend of mine, I went on a walk and I told my two friends, but this was before I was announcing that I'd sold, like, certain number of copies on my Instagram page.
What
number?
And I was like,
my friends, 12,000.
Thank you. Don't say certain number. 12,000.
So I sold 12,000, and that was so great for me. And I told my friends, and I was like, oh, you know, girls, I sold 12,000 copies. And one of my friends, like, you know, she was like, oh my god, this is so amazing, Ruby. I'm so happy.
It's incredible.
And I was like, thank you so much. Like, I was genuinely very happy. And then my other friend was like, oh, which book is this? Like, is this, you know, My Hope for Tomorrow? And I was like, no, it's Dear Self. Oh, is this like your third book? Are you serious? Like,
I mean, if you don't remember as well, just play along. I would just be like, oh yeah, I don't know which one it is.
Like, how long have we been friends for? Yeah. And I've, you know, this is something that I share with you consistently. It's not, you know, it's not a matter of Sheen where I've just told her, oh yeah, this book. She knows when I'm writing it. We talk
all the
like
time.
Every other day.
Yeah.
Like, wow. I was like, wow. And then when I announced it, people who I've not spoken to congratulated me, but there's a lot of people who I talk to like every other day. No congratulations, no, oh, so proud of you, none of that. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, I was like, now I know who my true friends are. Mm-hmm. And now I know, like, people who, Sheen, like, you know, I'm not like this world famous author or anything. I'm making it still. But over these past 5 years, as I've stepped up, my friend circle has gotten very tiny.
Okay, and that's reassuring.
It's, you know, I'm warning you because it really is that I've got one best friend, mm-hmm. And I've got two other really, really close friends. But other than that, it really is a matter of people who cared about you and who you cared about, but they're just not on that journey with you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the higher you get, the higher, like, the high that you feel, the happiness that you feel, if they don't reciprocate it, you just naturally distance yourself. You naturally feel like, if you're not happy for me, if you can't even give me a congratulations, like, if you can't even give me a well done, I'm proud mm-hmm. of you, what are we here for? Like, what are we talking for? Like, I have this particular friend who I've grown up with, I've known her for like, you know, 10, 12, 13 years, and I haven't got a single congratulations. Oh my God, Ruby, I'm so proud of you. You sold, you know, 12,000 yeah. copies. Nothing. And they see it all. Like, they see it on my story.
You know they're seeing it. That's the worst part. You're like, I can tell that you've seen it.
And then you ask yourself, you're like, am I wrong? Like, has my head gotten too big? Or is this just something I expected? Like, just a mere congratulations I expected. Mm-hmm. Like, that can't be too much, no. right? That can't be like, you know, you want so much. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, when you become, you know, when you achieve your dreams, you forget your friends. And then it's just a matter of, well, no, maybe your friends just don't want to take that journey with you. Maybe they just don't, like, they don't want you happy.
You know what? 100% I resonate with that. Like, especially with me, I had the TEDx recently. And
yeah. Oh yeah, I know. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
You see, look at your reaction, and you don't even know me that well. And I was like,
I was snooping on your Instagram earlier.
So. Thank you. So I was just very excited about this. It's a huge deal for me, right? And a lot of my friends who usually interact with everything I post just watched all of the stories and didn't say congratulations. They wouldn't like this post. And and I notice, and sometimes I feel petty for noticing, and because, but at the same time, I feel like I don't want a lot of people to like it. I just want the people that are meant to be my friends to like be part of this for me. And I do want them to appreciate it. Like, and I don't think that's asking for too much, because if you're my friend and I cannot... You know what I hate? When you can't share good news with your friends, because you're like, they won't care, or you don't want them, their reaction is just going to be a bit meh. So that's when you know that it's not a good friendship, right? Because you want them to be excited for you.
Absolutely. And then how do you tell them without looking like you're making a scene out of it? Like, how do you say, oh,
yeah. That's what I meant by like toxic friendship. So with that, I was like, oh, but it's a big deal. Why is no one telling me? It's the same thing. Like, I have a childhood friend as well. Yeah. And she watched all of the stories, didn't message me, didn't say congratulations. And I was like, oh, I was waiting for it. You know, it's like, I want you, I've done something and I want you to be part of this with me, but you don't want to. Yeah. And you're right. Like, it's not like you forget your friends. I feel like your friends just don't want to be part of it.
Yeah.
And
it really, in all honesty, Sheen, it's not your fault. It's literally a matter of when you see other people doing better than you, it's a human behavior thing, literally. Like, you'll be happy for them, but you always want other people to do less better than you. So you're like, oh, I'm really happy for you, but I want to do better. Like, even if it's your friend, like, I don't know if you watch this movie. There's this movie called Three Idiots.
I've seen it, obviously.
And in the exam session, like, you know, the bit where they're
marks when he comes first.
And they come second. They're last. And they're like, we learned something about human behavior today, that you don't feel as bad about your friend failing as you do about them coming first. It's literally, it's true. Yeah. It's in any, you know, while I was starting this Instagram page, I was going through heartbreak, and there were, you know, friends of mine who were in relationships, in long, 5-year long relationships, getting engaged, getting married, having children, all the while I'm going through heartbreak, all the while I'm experiencing all of this. And while to others it may have looked like, oh my God, Ruby's, you know, she's being independent, she's standing up on her own 2 feet, she doesn't need a man, I still looked at them and I was like, oh, they've got...
I want that, yeah.
Literally. So I was happy for them. I was like, yeah, I'm really, really happy for you guys. But there always comes this little bit of a sadness, like, why don't I have that too? But that's still something that I could have. But, you know, your podcast is not something they can have, because they don't, that's not their goal, isn't it? So when it's not something that they can have or they want for them for their particular life, then they should just be happy for you. You know, my friends don't want to write books. I want to write books. So just congratulate me.
Yeah, but that's what I don't understand. Like, I understand like the twinge about seeing other people getting married and I want to get married. Yeah. But then when it's something like, for example, for you, you're telling me you've sold 12,000 copies. I'm like, amazing, because I don't want to write a book. I don't want to sell a book. Yeah. So it doesn't matter that I'm not selling this. And this is a huge accomplishment. So I am happy for you. But then I struggle when people can't reciprocate that, especially people who are meant to be close to you. And you're right. This is toxic.
It is. And it gets to a point where your friend number literally decreases because you're like, okay, you know, I just want the basic minimum. Like that is, you know, getting a congrats is the basic level of
I say it to everybody, even people I don't know. If I see something, I will say it.
Yeah. Literally. It just means so much when it comes from your friends. Absolutely. But when it's not there, that's when you're like, oh, okay,
cool, man.
Well, something's wrong here.
Okay, so how's your YouTube journey been so far? Are you enjoying it?
Oh my god, I love it. I don't know why it took me so long. Like, seriously, I love it. I'm technically very inefficient, so it was a journey. So my first video was really, really bad. Second video was really bad. Third, like, I think, whose video did I watch? I watch Ali religiously, okay? I am, like, a religious, avid Ali watcher. And there was this particular video that he said something about, like, your first 100 videos are going to be really crap. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, I need to reach that 100 mark, then I'll be better. Yeah. So yeah, I've been like working on lighting, working on everything else. But essentially, I'm a creator. Like, I'm so technically inept. Creating is easy. So writing the scripts, planning the videos is all great. When it comes to filming, editing, lighting, that's something that I'm still working on. It's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. But I love it. Yeah, it's definitely something that I'm like, why did I not do this sooner? But
you know, but now you're jump here. On it. So that's really good. Yeah, I agree with you. It's the same with me with the podcast. Like, the creative side of things, love it. And then when it comes to like the editing, the tools, and I struggle a lot with technology. Yeah, so it's just about learning this now. And I think this is the better version of this problem. Like, you wouldn't want to have problems with content creation. So I think this is something that we can learn. So we're good. Okay, one last question. No, we have two last questions for you. Okay. This one is, you know, during your journey so far, what has been your most favorite highlight?
Okay, so my most favorite highlight would definitely be, we went to this wedding, this family, close friends wedding, and my whole family was there. So my dad, my brother, everyone was there. And the DJ especially stopped the music to acknowledge me in front of all these people that I've grown up with. Yeah. And it was just to say, like, because we come from such a small community, like, you know, we don't have any writers, any authors, none of that. Like, I was the first person in my community, which is great because now I see like the YouTubers in my community. Mm-hmm. I see, you know, podcasters. I see all these incredible, incredible creators. Mm-hmm. So this was 2 years ago. And when he stopped the music and he, you know, acknowledged the fact that I'd written books and I was an author and I was making like everyone really proud. And then my dad started crying and it was a really, really, it was definitely the highlight because everything that I do is with the intention to make my dad proud.
Yeah.
I have obviously this goal of serving people and everything, but I've always aimed to live a life where he's just happy that his kids are happy and his kids are doing well and he's proud. So that was, until so far, definitely my best, most favorite highlight. I know it's very personal. It's not like
I love it. I love it. Your dad must be so proud. I mean, he was just standing there watching you at the moment. You know, he's definitely proud.
Yeah. Oh my god, he literally, I'm so sorry about that. Like, I'm literally talking, right, and he's just opened the door and I was like, what are you doing? I'm recording. He's like, yeah, I'm just watching you. Exactly. Like, I just want to watch you.
Oh, bless him. That's very cute. Okay, now final question. What's the next big highlight that you are working towards and really looking forward to?
So my goal was to make at least one of my books do really, really well. And I think Dear Self has definitely achieved that. So since Dear Self has achieved that, I want to make sure that with my stepmom's just brought me coffee and tea. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
My next Mm-hmm. Yeah, my next goal. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
My next goal. This is what happens when you live in a brown household. Like, you know, there's no sense. Like, this happens with my YouTube videos as well, yeah? So I'll be recording my YouTube videos, and then suddenly, like, my little brother will be going up the stairs, downstairs, up the stairs, downstairs. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, can you
guys
just
not leave? You need a little sign outside when you're recording.
I have to scream in one of this video. I had to stop, and I had to be like, can you guys just stop shouting?
You should have bloopers. Yeah.
The, you know, the greatness of living out by yourself, Sheen. Honestly, yeah. I wish. I just wish. Oh, God. But yeah, yeah, so my next goal, Dear Self, was something that I feel like it's a book that's definitely allowed me to make my mark in the self-publishing world, mm-hmm, as a writer, because to sell that many books in such a short period, mm-hmm, as a self-published writer is very difficult, because it's very hard to turn your following into a readership, mm-hmm, like an actual buying readership. It's very hard. Mm-hmm. So my goal has always been to sign a publishing contract with a traditional publisher.
Right.
So that's something I've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I want to find an agent and find a traditional publisher for either this book to republish it, mm-hmm, and make it big, or for my next book.
Okay.
So securing a traditional publishing contract is definitely on my list of two things. The second is obviously to finish my novel.
Ooh, that's exciting.
I started writing it, mm-hmm, in 2019, December. I stopped in 2020, March, because we went in lockdown, and I can't write fiction at home.
Oh, yeah.
I live in a very, very thisy brown household with two brothers. My little brother's screaming now. I'm so sorry. So sorry. So, yeah, two brothers, very loud, and it's very hard, basically.
I know.
To finish it.
So hopefully once lockdown ends, then you can start writing again.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's amazing. I can't wait to read that one.
What about you? You tell me, what are your goals? Like, what do you want to do? What's your next highlight?
Oh, very good question. So for me at the moment, my most creative thing is the podcast. And this season, the new season, you are the first one I'm filming, actually. So I really want to. So I'm going to move to YouTube. I'm going to start posting the podcast on YouTube. And
that's going to be amazing.
So that's, no, I think that's going to be the main highlight at the moment. I want to see the podcast reach more people. I want people to interact a bit more with it. And this season, we're having a lot more important discussions, like we just did, about representation, self-worth, self-love, and not just about, you know, sharing stories from other women, but also sharing the struggles. And let's talk about how do we take these struggles away for the next generation, and how did we survive them? Because having these conversations are so important. And I thoroughly enjoy talking to people. So you can tell lockdown has been hard on me. Yeah. So now,
you're great, honestly.
I love this. This is such a good creative outlet. And I love engaging with people. And I just want to keep pushing with the podcast and learn how to do all the editing and all of that. And yeah, that's the main highlight at the moment. And maybe because I also write a blog. So obviously I'm not going to talk to you about writing, because my writing is nowhere here.
Oh, please. I'm sure it's amazing. Every writer does that. They downplay themselves.
I love writing. And it started off as me just writing my process of doing my PhD, writing my thesis in lockdown. And then I just wrote about different things that I like knowledge equity and all of that. And it's been very erratic in terms of theme. There's no overarching theme about the writing. But I'm thinking of doing a newsletter now, so it can be a bit more themed, and I can have a little blog and a little related things to it. So, yeah, so these are going to be the next few things, I suppose.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Honestly, that sounds, and I wish you all the best with it. I know you're going to do great.
Thank you.
But yeah, I love this idea of your podcast. It's absolutely amazing to provide all these tools to people. I think it's amazing.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for being with us today. This has been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to read your book, the next one, I mean, and good luck with it. And we'll be in touch.
Definitely. You take care of yourself, Sheen. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, just hang on for a minute. I need to stop it and then upload it.
I'm so sorry about my family.
Oh, that's okay. It just made